koutou katoa and welcome to Well with Anahila. Māloe lau mārie. It's Tongan Language Week and I've just greeted to you in the Tongan language greeting. Māloe lau mārie, that literally translated tēnā koe. This afternoon, it's my pleasure to welcome a lawyer, a principal advisor at the Salvation Army, Ronji Tanielu. And Ronji and I, we are going to have a conversation about well-being in New Zealand, and we'll bring it down to South Auckland if we have time. So Ronji, usually we have a little something to share with everybody about yourself, but I just want to say welcome to Well with Anahila, and I will leave you to share personal information about where you're from.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Malore lei. Whakawhitai ki o tua.
Yeah.
Malore lei. Ronji Tanielu, really blessed to come and hang out with you on this show, Anahila. So just quickly, my name is Ronji, born in Samoa, but raised in the capital city of the whole universe, which is Mangere in South Auckland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so absolutely proud of where
Otara.
I come. No, it's not Otara. That's the half capital. So thankful and really proud of my upbringing, tough upbringing, but by the grace of God, still alive. Have returned to New Zealand in 2017. My wife and I were serving as missionaries throughout Africa and parts of Asia and Israel and so on. And so we've come back to save a bit of money, and then we plan to head back overseas. So I work as a lawyer and the principal advisor for the Social Policy and Parliamentary Unit of the Salvation Army. So my job quickly is to cause as much trouble to politicians and bureaucrats as possible. So I'm really thankful that I can come and sit across you, Anahila.
Oh, that's
so
great. I'm pretty sure members of Parliament listen to my weekly radio station all the time.
I don't know if they listen to us, but that's okay.
That's okay. At least we'll let everybody else know our conversation. So maybe before we get on to talking about that, it's interesting to hear that you've been on a mission to Africa and Israel. How is it different from New Zealand? Or is there similarities?
I think in New Zealand, for example, we have relative poverty. We're in such a wealthy country, so when we talk about poverty in New Zealand, I think it's relative to the wealth in our country. In countries that we still work in, my wife and I just came back from the Philippines about a month ago. We still do work in parts of Africa and Asia. We see extreme poverty, so that's a major difference. One of the big areas that we work in is working with persecuted Christians, so those who are being suffered, tortured, raped for their faith in Jesus. And so we do a lot of work in trying to set up orphanages or establish businesses to support widows and children. And so I think New Zealand is such a safe, blessed country relative to the rest of the world. So we were away for about 2.5 years, solid, and then we've come back to New Zealand. We use our own money. We don't ask people for money.
Okay.
We have a couple of businesses, and we raise our own funds, and we still go back and forth to certain countries. So we've come back to save money and then move back long-term, maybe in a year or two.
Okay, when you say move back, where will you be moving back to?
We'd like to base ourselves in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
Our friends have a couple of ministries that transport Bibles into restricted nations, and so that's a work that we'd like to maybe commit long term to. And Hong Kong is a great location because it's central. You can get to Asia, you can get to Africa, you can get to Europe pretty easily. It's pretty expensive though, but we'll see how we go.
Yeah, because I think many New Zealanders, it's quite new to them to be persecuted for your Christian beliefs. Hey, we take. I'm not sure whether we take it for granted or that we can do what we do here in New Zealand.
I think we're blessed to have the Human Rights Act and the Bill of Rights Act and those things that help protect those things. But you know, the United Nations estimates that there's over 250 million Christians suffering for their faith. That ranges from not being able to get a job through to being tortured, raped, killed for their faith. And so we've seen both sides of that spectrum in our work overseas. And so that's a personal passion for us, and my wife is a beautiful Samoan woman. She's an accountant, and so we've tried to help, for example, set up micro businesses, micro enterprises in the Philippines and Nigeria and other places, just to support that, because we don't want to be colonial Christians and think the West has all the answers, but we want to support what's happening in those countries already.
Yeah, because how does a lawyer and an accountant not making money, but out there working basically for your beliefs and your faith, how that doesn't quite add up, really?
Sure. And the normal Pacifica journey as well. I mean, they absolutely, you know, we honor our education, but our education doesn't define us. My wife and I have 6 degrees at university between us. And we're really blessed with our education, even and especially because we came from some tough backgrounds. But at the same time, our faith in Christ and the gospel is more important than anything, including our own lives. And so in terms of being well, that's what drives our well-being. And so we would quickly, easily forfeit money and the things that this world wants in order for the sake of the gospel. At the same time, we know that we need money. We know that you have to pay your bills. And so we've come back to New Zealand to save some money, and we plan to go back overseas. And the Salvation Army was amazing in keeping my job open for me while we were away.
Most of the women that we have in this program, because it is a program about women. You're the second male we've had, so pretty privileged. We had Tamati Coffee, and now we've got you, Ron.
It's all downhill now. It's all downhill since Tamati.
I reckon. Anyway, most of the women they talk about for well-being, what they do, some of them go to church. Their faith is really the thing that keeps them grounded. Most of everyone that we've spoken to have talked about their faith. So let's bring it back from outside New Zealand to what you do at the Salvation Army. So really, what is the purpose of your role again?
So my job is to represent the Salvation Army back to government, back to corporates, to other influencers. We argue and debate and discuss around policy and law change from our Christian worldview. The Salvation Army is a church before we are a charity. And an NGO, so that we're very clear about what our worldview is. But at the same time, the Salvation Army has always been geared towards the least, the most vulnerable, the most marginalized in any society that we work in. And so obviously we represent those views across the housing issues or addictions issues or financial capability or budgeting issues. So my job across all of those different areas of social policy is to argue for changes in law, changes in policy, changes in program, and also represent the voice of our clients. We work with about 120,000 clients per year, and so those are often the most vulnerable, marginalized Kiwis in our country, and so we believe that we have a mandate, hopefully, to represent those voices and those realities.
So that the listeners understand, the things that you've argued with politicians about, has anything in terms of the well-being budget, does it reflect what you've been trying to achieve?
I think in terms of the well-being budget, the well-being budget is quite a brave step by your government, so we acknowledge that. One of the things we think was missing, and that was an acknowledgement of spiritual well-being, and we've advocated for that. And again, from our Christian worldview, that's important to us, but also in the Te Ao Māori framework and the Pasifika framework, that is crucial to the holistic well-being of someone. So I think in respects of that, that's what's missing. But in terms of the other aspects of the well-being budget, look, we're just watching to see how it rolls out. We know that there's been, for example, the free lunches program, and even today Minister Whatfoy announced an interest rate cap, and for example, that is a wonderful step by your government, but at the same time I think there's other areas that we're still quite challenged with, that, and that's the tension that we have as an NGO, as a Christian NGO, is to hold the government to account, but at the same time to work with government to improve our country.
That's really interesting. See the interest rate for the minister to make a decision on having a gap on the interest rate. When that bill started, it didn't have that. So did the Salvation Army have a role in that?
I think a lot of NGOs that work in that sector, I think by the final count, the minister was saying that about 85% of submissions actually called for a cap. So I think the minister listened to the community, listened to the people working on the front line. So, and he changed that, and I acknowledge that that was the right thing to do. Maybe it wasn't the exact cap that we wanted, but at the same time, at least it's in there, and we can can, we can, better to have something than nothing. And so we can work with that. So I think when that's the tension that we work, because we challenge the government, we argue with the government, and we're not going to always agree with the government or the opposition, but that's our role in civil society.
Yeah, which is good, because we don't want to all think the same.
Absolutely.
You know, otherwise no change will come about. So you've been away for 2 years. You weren't here at the height where people... Were you here when, at the height where... homelessness and people sleeping on the and the shopping centres were becoming normal?
We had done some work before we left. We left in 2015, and so the army was involved in pushing a lot of this advocacy, as well as other groups around homelessness. So we were tracking stuff while we were away, and we had done some work for the Salvation Army in Nigeria and the Philippines and the UK. So we were still very clear about what our army positions were. And homelessness has always been an important part of the army's work. So we saw a lot of that. We were involved in the Pack Up for Homes advocacy and submissions to Parliament and a couple of reports that we did. So I think we've been quite integral in that debate.
So you spoke about, thank you, Ronji. So you spoke about the clients, and they're the most vulnerable people in the community. What are they saying now that they, what is the only difference have you seen in the last, you've been away, you're here 2015, you went away and you come back. Is there a difference in terms of what the clients are saying?
Look, I think the numbers for us, I think you're governed in terms of the winter energy payments, some of the other welfare payments that the government has done, I think has obviously increased the money that's in the pockets of a lot of our clients. I guess at the same time, we're asking how is that money being used?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one thing, throwing money at a problem doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
And so I think core to a lot of our work since I've returned to New Zealand is around building financial capability or budgeting or financial mentoring, just to increase the knowledge of our people, not just to get out of a debt, for example, but also to make better financial decisions in general, like to shop, you know, make the what's the difference between shopping at New World and Pack and Save? I think those kinds of practical things, I think that's a difference that we've noticed since we've come back. But I still think there's a real air of despair a lot of our clients. There's a hopelessness that, and I think that's not easily captured by statistics. One of the biggest increases in our Salvation Army services is what's called our recovery churches. And these are church services where no discrimination, whatever background you've come from, but everyone who is going through a journey to recovery from whatever addiction, alcohol, other drugs, problem gambling, pornography, whatever it might be. And we've seen more and more come to those services as a way to engage with their spiritual well-being. And so I think that's a big change that I've noticed since coming back. Yeah, multiple changes, but those are a couple that I want to mention.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. With the winter energy payment, I've been up and down the country, and that's something that most people say to me, you know, thank Jacinda and Grant for the winter energy payment. Oh, it's such a little payment, but that's what I'm hearing from people. They're thanking the government for that. But it's interesting how you talk about what's not captured is that air of despair. I'm also seeing that as well in Papakura and Tamaki.
Sure.
And it's because it's something that people don't go about talking about. Right, but there's a feel of that what's happening in communities.
I think it's also the complexity of things that people are facing that, you know, is really hard to capture in statistics. One of the things we challenge government departments is government departments work in silos. They work in their little block, and people aren't in silos. Yeah. And so when they come, we give out 60,000 food parcels per year. That's an indictment to us as a nation. We we've worked in countries where there's extreme food poverty, and here we come and give 60,000. 60,000 that go to about 30,000 individuals or whānau. But that's just the front door for us. Then they come in, and then it's addictions issue or housing issue or a family harm issue or sexual violence issue. And so that complexity, the weight of that complexity, I don't think is captured well. And that's something that we're constantly trying to push back to government, say, well, this is the reality of what people are facing. So government systems need to be adapted to try and I think for things like whānau order are great examples of trying to work across that complexity, but I think better can be done.
You spoke about what was missing from the well-being budget was the spiritual well-being. How do you think that could have been captured on the budget?
I think as a lawyer, you can measure religious freedom when by the way that a government does not allow religious freedom. And I think so. Okay. So if there's laws, for example, in our Human Rights and Bill of Rights Act that say that you have the freedom of religion, and when that right is not allowed, and I'm not saying that is happening now, but when it's not allowed, then you can actually measure there that the right is not allowed to express your faith, whatever that faith might be, but in that arena. So I think that's one way. I think of things like models like the Whono Whale model or the Te Whare Tapa Whā model that is extensively used across government departments but is not captured in the wellbeing area. So why are those models that bring up a Te Ao Māori or Pasifika framework, those could have been included? Because regardless of whether there's a wellbeing budget or not, the Salvation Army would continue to work off a Te Whare Tapa Whā model where spiritual wellbeing is central to the wellbeing of a person. Mm.
And you say you've spoken that your role is to argue with government and to inform them of what Salvation Army believes that could add value to New Zealand. Has that been? Have you that view been? Has anyone in government been informed of that view?
Yeah. Well, look, we argued right from the start when Stats NZ was developing their indicators early on, and we went back to Treasury and look, all we can do is raise the issues, raise the voices, but often. I think a lot of times we're not listened to or we're ignored for whatever reason that might be, but that doesn't, it's our job not to win. It's our job is to fight.
To let them, people in who are in leadership positions, who are in decision-making role, know what
absolutely. And Stats NZ chose not to listen, even though we advocated strongly that they should include some sort of spiritual well-being measurement. And we did the same to Treasury, and they chose not to. And so, look, we are going to continue to advocate because, again, as a Christian NGO, that's core to who we are.
In terms of the members of the Salvation Army, did you know what roughly the numbers
church?
Are?
Yeah, the church is quite small, so I think across the country, I think it's sitting at about 10,000 people. So the members of the church are fairly small. The social services are huge, but it is, in terms of one of the Christian denominations, it's one of the smaller ones.
Yeah, we're almost halfway through, just over halfway through our Talanoa this morning. I want to take us to the Members' Bill that's before the House at the moment. So we've got the End of Life Choice Bill at the moment. What's the view of what's your personal view on that?
My personal view is I absolutely believe in the sanctity of life. I'm a bit troubled that we want to pass this bill that. That legalizes euthanasia or assisted suicide, and at the same time we're talking about youth suicide and trying to limit or reduce that. So I think I'm a bit challenged by that. The Army's view is clearly against the bill, as is my view personally, and so we've lobbied and advocated against that. And we believe that palliative care is absolutely crucial, and it is a wonderful service in New Zealand. We're a little bit worried about the effects of the bill, you know, so in terms of the medical profession, I mean, the medical profession has come out really strongly against the bill. And so I think we're really worried about the passage of this bill. And we're a little bit worried about a lot of the bills that are coming. I mean, these are pressing moral issues. I just want to acknowledge also, Anahila, to thank you for voting against the abortion bill.
So we've got the End of Life Bill, and now we've got the abortion reform, the abortion legislation bill that's before the House. And yeah, I'm someone that's voted against it. But if we can come back to the End of Life Choice Bill, we're working, so that's going through the House, and we are in committee. And one of the things that's missing there, we talked about it, and we're currently working on it. It is an individual member's right to vote, so that means there's no party views that's been shared. This is my own view. There's a bit where, but when someone dies in New Zealand, they are given their full cultural treatment. when someone passes away. So one of the views that if the end of life bill actually goes through and it goes into law, one of the concerns that I want to put through is about that, is about what is it before someone makes that choice, how is their cultural beliefs addressed in that? Yeah, so that's something that we're a bit conflicted really, because one is we don't want the bill to go through, but then if the bill does go through, we want it to be the best bill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So and I think that's it's a key point. I mean, it's such a contentious issue, but I think one of the things that we've focused on is that palliative care is sufficient in our country.
Yeah.
It's just that it needs greater support, and I think we're concerned that vulnerable New Zealanders will be coerced into the end of life. You know, because if you ask a lot of elderly people that we and the army works off huge numbers, of course they're going to feel socially isolated. Of course they're going to feel like a burden to their family. Even Pacifica elderly people are feeling that way. So I think in a caring, loving, compassionate society, is that really what the kind of messages that we want to show to the public? And that's one of the things that we're worried about.
I know it's really hard to understand that Pacific people can mistreat their elderly, but I have come across cases where financial where family members are
I've seen that quite a lot of times in my own family and I think you know I think we romanticize the Pacifica community and think that
we've
got it all together and that we're the best idea of community. There's a lot of things that are wrong
in
our community. Absolutely. You know, I love Mangere, but there's a lot of stuff I can't stand in my community. So I think there's some real challenges. So we're always in danger of romanticizing communities and thinking that brown people got it all together. I think there's some serious issues that we need to own as well.
Yeah. So we're coming to the abortion legislation bill. So what's happening? It is also a members' choice, that not a party view. So what's happening now, it's going through the House and the special select committee has been set up to hear all submissions from members of the public, and the submissions close on the 19th of September. I'm part of that committee. And there is quite a few that's come through, and we'll start hearing from what the public is saying. But what the public is saying about the changes, but what I found talking to some Tongans and Pacific people didn't know that abortion was legal here in New Zealand. So
I think misinformed.
So one of the things that we do that does come across is, one, they didn't really know that it happened here, and two, they don't want it to if it does happen, they don't want any changes to happen. But really, one of the things that I've found since becoming a member of parliament, I'm more informed about how laws are made than I did previously, even though I worked in a government department for years. So what do you think the level of understanding out there in the community about all these bills that's before the House?
I think for a lot of our mātua, a lot of our parents, they might not that live in New Zealand, won't fully understand in Pacifica communities or even working class communities. They wouldn't fully understand that these bills are in play. But see, Pacifica people are conservative by nature, because of their religious views. I'm speaking generally, and so I think when they understand these things, they're actually quite moved by it, because they generally we believe in the sanctity of the human life. The Salvation Army is clearly a pro-life organization. My own personal views are clearly pro-life, and I think and I think the way that this debate's been shaped, that it decriminalizes women, I think that's not true. I think it's smokes and mirrors. I think that that what Minister Little and others I think people are misinformed when the government's not truly giving us the full information. This bill does it. Abortion doesn't criminalize women in the first place, unless it's an illegal abortion. And so I think moving forward, I really hope that people would speak out. If your listeners, whatever your view might be, even if you disagree with me, but if we believe that killing of other people is wrong, and abortion is the intentional killing of other people, then I believe that abortion is wrong. And so I think any bill that increases that opportunity, we need to challenge.
Yeah, so you're a lawyer, and you know that the Law Commission made recommendations to the minister. Have you seen the recommendations?
Yeah, you saw the three options that they put forward, but a lot of it was ignored. I think a lot of the views were ignored, and Look, I think the bill is going to pass anyway, regardless of the submissions. I really hope that New Zealand First would come in with a referendum, because I think whatever the issue might be, this is such a critical issue, and you need to bring this to the public conscience. And so we're going to lobby New Zealand First to bring in that referendum, because, look, we just need to be really mindful and careful that we're not liberalising the abortion laws unnecessarily.
Yeah, and that's your role in terms you spoke about in the start, that your role is to argue your Salvation Army's beliefs and values with those who are in position of leadership. We've got 4 minutes to go.
Sure.
Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon?
I don't know, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
There's a whole bunch of stuff that we're doing, but I guess in terms of wellness, I think for me, wellness or well-being often comes from my faith. Sitting inside McDonald's doesn't make me a hamburger.
Yeah.
And sitting inside a church doesn't make me a good person or a Christian. It's a faith. And to be honest, Anahila, I'll be dead or in prison if I didn't become a Christian with the way that I was heading in life.
Yeah,
out in Mangere, being a good little hood rat of Samoa. I'm just really thankful, and I'm thankful that whatever your listeners might be going through, I hope that spiritual well-being is really crucial to, because you can exercise till the cows come home, which is good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily change what's happening inside. Mm. So for me, my faith in Jesus Christ is the core, and I'm blessed to be able to work in an organization that allows me to live out my faith in a country that's not always that liking of anything to do with Christianity. People love what the Salvation Army does. They love how we do it. They don't like why we do it. But we are unashamed that we do it for the name of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, amen. All right, so if I'm listening and I want to get in touch with the Salvation Army, how would I do that?
Check out our website. We're on every social media platform. I'm useless for social media, so you can go on Facebook and Twitter and Snapbook and Insta something. I don't know.
Okay.
The army's all over there. If you're really in care, we have about we have about 90 ministry centres across the country. So if you know people that are really struggling around food or addictions or whatever, then please come through one of our doors.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that our staff around the country would come and offer you, support you during whatever crisis you might be going through.
Does one has to be a Christian to seek help from the Salvation Army?
Absolutely not. We are non-discriminatory. We are clear on who we are, clear on what our mission is, and our mission is to care for people, reform society, and transform lives by God's power. But it doesn't matter who uses our services.
Yeah, well, thank you, Ronji. We are almost out of time. Thank you very much for choosing to be with me today. And if you know anybody in Salvation Army who'd like to come and have a conversation with me about what their service they're providing, that would be great. Let them know. My phone number is 0800 Anahila. I really love the fact that you spoke about between you and your wife, you have 6 degrees, or is it 8? 6. And that education doesn't define you in terms of that. So I'm just want to acknowledge your faith, even just having this talanoa with you. I can feel your belief and your strength and your faith and what it provides for you. Thank you very much for talking with me today. All the very best in what you're doing.
Thank you.
Maybe one day we'll have your wife back.
She
can talk about what.
She's a much better person than I am.
Actually, I heard somebody say before, I'm the good half and my wife's the better half.
There
you go. Anyway, that was Well with Anahila today. I hope you're having a great Tongan language week. The Tongan language theme this year is Whakakoloa o Aotearoa Aki a Tauhi Whanua, which is a Tongan perspective on enriching Aotearoa. When Tongans refer to Whanua, which is the land, it also means the body. So that's one thing I'm taking from this year, is that I'm going to look after my physical being and try to be a little bit healthier in terms of my lifestyle. Well, have a great Tongan Language Week. Have a great September. It is the first week of spring. Have a great day. Thank you, Ronji, again. And
Mahalo.
That was Well with Anahila, the Labour List MP based in Papakura and Tāmaki.